Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Extra Point Podcast. I'm Brett, and I'm one of the pastors here at First Family Church. And on the Extra Point Podcast, every week, we dive into further application, insight, or observation from the text in which we preached the previous Sunday. And this week, we were in 2 Thessalonians 3, verses 6 through 13, talking about a biblical work ethic. And so today we're going to dive into three really practical questions that came in after the message. I know some of you on Sunday were probably listening and like, I'm not sure this applies really to my situation. Well, that's exactly why we do this podcast, to dig into some of those specific scenarios that maybe we don't always have time to cover on a Sunday morning, or maybe don't come up until Sunday afternoon. And so these are three really good questions that probably a lot of you are wondering about. So let's jump right in. Question number one was, what does a biblical retirement look like? Or how can you still work hard in retirement when you don't have vocational work? That is such a good question. And because I am nowhere near retirement, I asked that question of one of our elders who is retired, Scott Searzan. Scott, how can you still have a biblical work ethic when you don't need to have vocational work to make money any longer?
Well, I would say that that's partially what you should develop over your whole life, whether you're at work or you're leading your family or you're in ministry or whatever. So I see it as when you don't have to work vocationally to put food on the table, you have more time to do things that hopefully you've been wanting to have more time to do the rest of your life, such as ministering to people, leading your family, in my case, opportunity to really build into my grandkids' lives. Things that when I was working 50, 60 hours a week, I had limited free time to do that. So what I've appreciated is just the time to focus on people. You know, ministering to people and mentoring, things like that. That brings me a lot of value.
And that might not be as physically demanding anymore as what you did for your career, but you're still in control over the intensity of your effort in the things that you are now involved in.
Correct. In my particular case, since I was a business owner, I had a lot of employees, like 25. So for me, retirement was a huge stress relief of that day-to-day grind. So I've enjoyed being able to be more free to actually have more personal relationships with people, deeper relationships. Even something silly like when I retired, my wife and I thought, oh, we're going to have all kinds of more time together. But what I found was we were busy doing these things, you know, with grandchildren. And I also do projects. So I still do a little bit of work, design work and a little bit of construction work. But I actually need to keep a schedule, which I thought retired people don't need schedules. But what was interesting is my wife and I, we actually found that we had to actually set aside an afternoon, a date afternoon, because as retired, we didn't have the time we thought we would. We thought it would just be constantly just us two doing stuff together. And in turn, through us using our giftedness in different areas, we've actually had to actually, kind of like we did when we were working, we had to prioritize our time together.
That's very interesting. Before we started recording, you mentioned to me that you see as people get further in retirement, or even just as they get into retirement, there's this almost this cultural shift towards withdrawal, away from purpose, away from people. How have you managed that?
Yeah. So the thing, and I'm still learning this, but there's not this great pattern out there that says, as a Christian, here's how you do retirement. Our culture is totally about self-absorption, self-fulfillment. And I mean, that's what you grow up hearing is, oh, when you retire, you get to do what you want to do and that type of thing. that never settled real well with me. I saw patterns of that even in my parents. When they got self-absorbed through in their later years, it was actually a negative experience. And I just didn't really want to go down that path, which is not just my parents. I see that quite often. So as a Christian, I think the whole key is to put others first, putting our selfish desires away and loving and putting others first. And I think as a individual, we just have to have that front and center.
It feels like the question becomes very nuanced, and retirement has a lot of nuance to it because it really lands on the individual person. What are they going to do now with the additional time and freedom that they have?
Yeah, they have more time because they're not spending 50 hours a week working. And so it's what do you fill that with? And, you know, if you fill it with self, I mean, I play pickleball. I have a couple times a week, and we have a great community of Christian guys that do that. So it's a great fellowship time and a great activity. But if all you're looking for is activity and that type of thing, you know, it becomes self-absorbed. And that's not fulfilling. It's not healthy as a Christian to go down that path.
Yeah, it's almost like what we talked about on Sunday when Paul says, I had the right to support. I had the freedom to receive support from you, but I chose not to for your betterment so that I could be an example to you. And I think there's probably some correlations there with retirement where you do have the freedom to spend all of your time doing things that are all about yourself. But I think God receives great glory when there's retired people who say, you know what? I do have the freedom to spend all of my time on myself, but I'm not going to do that so that I can be an example to you for your betterment, or I can disciple you. I think when there's retired people who give up that freedom, who forego that right, that just is such an amazing example and brings God a lot of glory. I'm always reminded of an analogy that I heard many, many years ago, and I'm far from this, so it's easy to speak on, probably much harder to live. But the analogy was of a sprinter, and this isn't that far from the biblical analogy because Paul uses the analogy of running the race, but thinking about the Olympics. And when they're in the 100 meter and they are giving it all they got, they are giving everything at the end. And they are like lunging forward as hard as they can, sprinting as fast as they can to break the tape. And I'll never forget my pastor at the time saying, you want to break the tape sprinting. When your life's over, when it comes to a finish, you want to be sprinting at the end. And so obviously that doesn't mean physical speed, but whatever that does mean, whatever that looks like, I want to figure that out for myself. And I hope that our church wants to live like that, that no matter where God has us post-work, that we would find a way to still be sprinting and giving it our all. Great question. I'm glad that one came in. Second question is this. Do you regard spouses airing each other's concerns or aggravations about other people as meddling or gossip? And this hits home for a lot of us. It's easy to come home from work or small group and be like, you won't believe what so-and-so, yada, yada, yada. And before you know it, you're deep into conversation about someone else's business. And marriage is unique because you and your spouse are one flesh, you are unified, and you're supposed to process life together, but, and this is a big but, that doesn't give you a free pass to gossip to your spouse. Just a reminder, that three-question test that we gave on Sunday, is it your responsibility? Sometimes you're sharing it with your spouse because it is your responsibility and you need godly counsel on how to handle something. That's different than just venting. Second, are you seeking to help or just know? If you're telling your spouse about someone's situation so you can both pray for them and figure out how to help, that's one thing. But if you're just entertaining each other with someone else's drama, that's gossip, even in your own living room. And third, have you gone to the person directly? If you're complaining to your spouse about someone at church or in your small group, and you haven't had the courage to address it directly with them, it's probably crossing the line. And here's what I'd say. It's appropriate to seek your spouse's wisdom, to ask for prayer support, to process genuine hurt. But when it becomes entertainment, when you're bonding over criticizing others or making fun of other people or just venting without any intention of resolution, that's probably when you've crossed into a dangerous territory. John MacArthur is really helpful on this when he says, the heart check is whether you're building up or tearing down, even in private conversations with your spouse. Wayne Grudem points out, as he's exegeting Ephesians 4:29, where it says, let no corrupting talk come out of your mouth. He says that even applies to when you're just talking to your spouse at home. It's not like gossip suddenly becomes okay just because it's private. And I think everybody's had to check themselves on this. It's very easy to come home and just unload, but that's not building up and it's not helpful. Even though it's very difficult in your conversations between you and your spouse, when you need to discuss things that have happened, other people, I would really try to keep it maintained in those lanes. Processing genuine hurt, asking for prayer support, or figuring out how you can help these people. I think if it goes beyond those areas, you're in dangerous territory of turning their misery or their drama or just their life into your entertainment or bonding exercise. But it's a great question and very difficult to live out. Last question, and this is also a very tough one. Can you please give your impression on how Christians should handle able-bodied panhandlers and beggars, especially when they have Christian messaging on their signs? And this is where Sunday's message gets really practical, right? Because we talked about if you're not willing to work, you shouldn't eat. But when you're driving and you see someone at the intersection with a sign that says God bless or has a Bible verse on it, you're thinking, what do I do here? First, let me say discernment is huge. Because not everyone who looks able-bodied actually is. There's mental illness, there's hidden disabilities, there's a lot that we can't see. So we need to be careful about making snap judgments. But there's wisdom in finding a way to help that is maybe different than just monetary. So years ago in our small group, one of the things we did as a small group was we built these like car care kits. And so it was a 5-gallon bag and it had granola bars, some toiletries, just like a ton of stuff that would bless someone. And then we made enough that everyone in the small group could keep a number of them in their car. And so if they got to that point where they pulled up and there was someone who was panhandling or begging, there was a way to still care for them and bless them without necessarily having to make it a monetary gift. And that's a tough one because you have no ability to really have a conversation. There's no way at the stoplight that you can roll your window down and talk to that person enough to know an answer to that question. Are they willing to work? Are they able to work? It's just not possible. So in that instance where you can't find out more, you have very little time for conversation, just having something with you that could quickly bless them and be pretty safe, I think is a great option. Now, in regards to the Christian messaging on the signs, I would probably not give that much regard. Just because someone writes God bless doesn't mean we just throw discernment out the window. I think you still have to be wise and have wisdom in the situation, no matter what the sign says. But I think a really important thing is to maintain compassion. Each situation needs spirit-led discernment. And so it's really difficult to maintain that compassion. You can sometimes experience compassion fatigue, depending on what you do for work, a lot of different things. But the best thing we can do is try to maintain compassion in those situations because we don't know everything. We don't know all the details. But in the situations where we do know the details, asking the Holy Spirit, how can I help in a way that's genuinely loving and not enabling? All right, three great questions this week. I hope that this edition of the podcast was helpful to you. And just another reminder, let's not grow weary in doing good, whether we're working vocationally, whether we're trying to minister to people that we don't know the situation, whether we're retired, whatever it is, even when it's complicated and even when it requires more than we'd like to give, let's not grow weary in doing good. That's all for today's Extra Point podcast. Love digging into stuff like this with you. Really glad that our church people feel free to send in their questions. Until next time, keep working hard, whatever that looks like in your season of life, and see you Sunday.
Thanks for listening to the Extra Point Podcast. To find more content and resources to grow deeper in your relationship with Jesus, go online to firstfamily.church/resources.